Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 40 of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. I'm your host, Jim Sinacropi, up here inside the FingerLakes1.com studio on Monday evening, September 14th, 2015, and tonight we'll be joined alongside the Bobcat Bob LaPrade and Rhett Taccone back in studio. We'll be with you for the next hour, where we're going to talk about what to do when your ball comes to rest in a tree, in a beautiful tree. Your ball just comes to rest. It happened to me on Sunday for, I think, the first time in my golfing life. So there's some decisions you need to be aware of, rule-wise. Mm-hmm. The BMW Championship, second to last event of the PGA Tour season and FedEx Cup playoffs. We'll give you our thoughts on that event coming up this weekend. Bobby's pick of the week is the Golf Shot GPS for Android or iPhone. We'll tell you what's so special about that. This week's Zen Tip will have you trying to hole every shot inside 50 yards. Okay? And we'll have your local golf news, holes in one, and much, much more. Welcome to the studio tonight, Bobcat. How you doing?
All right. How you doing?
Pretty good. Last night of league, it's fall, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrible.
It is. But still a lot of good golf to play, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We actually have a great little trip lined up the three of us will be at this weekend. Sure. Or this Friday. We'll tell you about that a little later. Rhett, welcome back. How you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
It's a sweet Link Soul combo hat shirt you got going on there.
You got a rep. Make par, not war.
Yeah, I like that hat. That logo looks nice.
This is my this is one of my favorite hats, for sure.
So, as I mentioned, actually, the three of us were in the group this weekend when that happened. How about that?
Yep.
Crazy.
Sunday morning golf, I hit my second shot in the ninth hole at Seneca Falls Country Club. Should have probably gone out of bounds left into the parking lot.
You got a magic bounce. I don't know what it hit, but it held up all of a sudden.
And so I get up to my ball, and it wasn't all peaches and cream after staying in bounds. My ball was right up against the tree trunk, and I decided to hit a left-handed shot. I was about 125 yards out, so I took my 6-iron, turned it around backwards. And when I hit left-handed shots, a little technique for all you kids at home that you might find useful is I'll grip it. I don't interlock like I do right-handed, or I overlap right-handed, but I don't interlock, overlap anything. Baseball grip. And then I take a look at like a piece of turf, like a clover or something, some piece of grass where my ball would be if I was swinging. I address it and I'll swing, just like I'm going to swing, or as hard as I want to swing. And the club always hits the ball like 3-4 inches behind where I think it should be. Mm-hmm. So I do that a couple times and get that distance dialed in where it's consistently 4 inches. Then I address the ball 4 inches behind the hole, or however many inches behind my club is hitting, and give it a go. And I usually make good contact, because if I'm going to hit a left-handed shot like that, at very least I got to make contact to remove the ball from its position. You cannot whiff, right?
Right.
Yeah. One time last year, I was up against a little pine tree at the 125. Seneca Falls Country Club has a lot of small pine trees at the 125 yards that used to be there for yardage purposes back before. And it's odd how none of them have grown to be that big, because some of those are very old. Yeah. Anyway, I did that with an 8-iron from, and it rolled right up onto the green like 2 feet from the hole. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm just trying to make sure I hit it best. But my ultimate goal is the green. Well, this time I did hit the ball not as solid as I hoped. It kind of caromed off a root or to the right up in the air.
Something popped it up.
And right into another one of those 125 pine trees.
Beautiful shot of it, I think we have, don't we?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is the ball never came out of the tree. Like, I thought at first that I was blinded by the tree and the ball came down on the other side of it, and I was going to walk out there and hit a wedge and maybe make a par. Mm-hmm. But no, it was up in the tree.
I think it was, I think I said holy expletive. That's still in the tree, and there it is.
And that's my Vice One with the FL1 Sports logo, though you can't see it's on the other side, on the right hand side of that ball. It's upside down, sitting in that pine tree about eye level.
Looks like a gosh darn ornament.
About an 8 or 9 foot pine tree.
All right, looks like April 25th.
Christmas in December, yeah.
Christmas tree.
And it was a miserable day, so my ball guy had a little, I think, was wet when I hit, knocked up so much dirt around it.
Yeah.
So there it sat. So anyways, I was like...
you got to put one of those in the Christmas tree this year.
A little amazed.
That should be your Christmas card this year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Send it out.
Greetings. Season's greetings.
From the Synecropes. So anyways, what I did, and I actually did things correctly, I think. I said that I identified my ball. I realized that was my ball. Mm-hmm. The second thing I did was declared it unplayable. Yep. And then the third thing I did correctly was I took two club links from directly below the ball, and that's where I dropped it back in play. Mm-hmm. And then I had a nice wedge. I think I didn't have to putt it. It was like 2 inches, 3 inches for six.
Yeah,
yeah, it was a great wedge. It was a world-class six from a tree. Yep. Now, you're round to that point. I think you were actually even par. So that shot into the tree was more indicative of my round, where that would be a shot you would have think I would have hit yesterday as bad as my driver was.
Well, just
you made a great save out of that tree.
I was really happy with the six, obviously, and I tried not to get too upset about the ball going in the tree because, like I mentioned off the top, my second shot in that par five was OB, had an OB. Yeah, I got a nice break to keep it in, so I would have been took my seven if I had to.
But. No, you were very composed on that whole scenario. I mean, ball's in a tree after being up against the tree,
you know,
it could have been a disaster.
Like, you're mad about it? I've played so much golf, that's never happened.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to.
You were just
was like, wow, you guys were on the other side of the fairway. Did you see the ball, Bob, go into the tree?
No.
No, they
we
were.
We thought it was going to be around the tree. We didn't see it drop. So.
Yeah, and you were like, did that go in the tree? I was like, yep. I've never seen it in person.
And there it was. So anyways, my choice is then, basically, any time your ball goes in a tree, okay, you have two options. First option is to play the ball as it lies. You know, as long as you can strike the ball fairly, which would mean not disturbing any of the leaves on the tree or anything during your backswing or once in the process of swinging.
In back the process, swing. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, the backswing. You can't just like it would be on the ground in the woods or something.
Exactly. Yeah. You can take, kind of an uppercut swing from the ground and give it a shot, but you also have the option of climbing up in the tree, as we saw Bernard Langer do. Maybe you've seen that famous picture or video. And
Sergio did it.
And hit it from out of the tree, yeah.
Faldo did it too, I think. I don't think he hit from out of the tree, but he hit it in the tree on 18 at Pebble.
And
in the U.S. Open, but he
declared it unplayable and shook the tree.
Right.
Whatever you do, make sure that you don't disrupt the ball when you're climbing up the tree to hit it, because or shake the ball loose or anything, because that's a stroke penalty for moving a ball at rest. So that's one option. I decided I probably couldn't do that because it was kind of in the middle of the tree. It wasn't like sitting out on the edge. I would have had to go through a lot of pine tree before my club got to the ball.
Yeah.
And even if I hit it, who knows? And furthermore, I would have had to swing it left-handed, and I probably would have whiffed at it.
Two left-handed shots in a row would have been tough to make
six. Even if you whiffed at it, I think it would have dropped out on the ground, but it wouldn't have been a great lie. You would have probably been swinging left-handed again.
Well, you might have been under it, too. Right. You might have dropped straight down. Yeah.
And I didn't. Either way, it seemed like a no-brainer to me to take an unplayable, which was option two, okay? So option two is, as long as you can definitively identify your ball that's in the tree, you can declare it unplayable. And under Rule 28C, you can drop within two club lengths from the spot underneath your ball, no nearer to the hole, with a penalty of one stroke. And that's what you guys were joking about. You were saying, am I going two club lengths from where the ball is on a straight line through the air to the ground or what? Or do I got to go straight down and then to the right?
Well, one club down, one club right.
Yeah. Ended up doing it correctly, which was two club lengths from directly underneath where the ball is on the tree on the ground. So,
well, with the match, I think Bob and Booty were looking for you guys to go down and then over.
That's what
we were thinking. They were looking for shots at that point.
Yeah.
We were beating them at that point.
They were, and before a nice second half comeback.
Trying to get a penalty shot on you.
Yep. So, this is where I guess it becomes a little tricky, where you can get yourself in trouble. You got to identify the ball, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't declare the ball unplayable if you can't identify it. So if you're up there pretty high in a tree, and you even if you see it go in there, if you aren't able to identify your ball, you can't play an unplayable lie. You have to first identify your ball. And you can't disrupt your ball to identify. You can't say, throw me that ball. If it's mine, I'm going to take an unplayable or whatever. You have to identify it. You can't, like, have so, you can't like jiggle the tree, for example, and the ball falls down. And then you say, oh, yeah, that's my ball. I'm going to take an unplayable. No, but after you do that, that's essentially a lost ball.
Well, Nick Faldo at Pebble Beach went to the ref.
Right, the rules.
And he said, I think my ball's in this tree. I'm declaring it unplayable. I'm going to climb the tree and identify it.
Right.
So you can do that. You can say, if my ball's in this tree, I'm declaring it unplayable, and then climb the tree.
Oh, no kidding.
And I didn't. That's what Nick Faldo did.
He had to make sure he couldn't knock it down from the tree.
No. He had already declared it unplayable, so he went to
the... He can't declare it unplayable unless he finds it, though, unless he identifies it first.
In that case, he did. I remember it was this year they replayed it on the Golf Channel.
Yeah, there was a rules...
He had to go to them
to make sure he was doing the right.
He said, I think my ball's in this tree. I declare it unplayable, and then he climbed the tree and found his ball.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he shook it, you know.
Got it down.
Got it down and played his shot.
Moved it along.
Well, if you were to dislodge that ball before you identify it, you would have to place it back where it was.
Right.
According to the rules.
But he went up
there. I don't think in that case he did.
He didn't do that. He went up and saw it before he even
moved it. He went up, identified it, and then brought it down and
right.
played the unplayable.
Now, if he didn't get it out of there, that was his second shot, right? He doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So what's he take, a two-shot penalty there?
One-shot
penalty.
Yep. So he was sitting three in his next shot.
Right.
Well, this is why you should always put an identifying mark on your golf ball, just another reason. And if you need to identify your ball, you can use your rangefinder or binoculars to get a closer look. If it's way up there, you can take out a smartphone, take a picture of it, and zoom in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You're free to use all of those methods for identifying it. If a player is advised that his ball may have been found, he cannot refuse to identify it. So if someone says, if you're looking for your ball, and somebody says, hey, I see a ball there in that tree, then you have to identify it before you can declare your ball lost. Isn't that something?
Right. Yep.
And that would obviously be true if a player happens to find a ball in the woods or some grassy wasteland. If somebody finds it, you can't say, oh, no, I don't even want to identify it. You have to attempt to identify it first.
Right.
Confusing rules of golf. Very penal very penal, this game. Now, another thing to remember is if you find your ball within 5 minutes, you don't need to identify it within that same 5 minutes. So if you find the ball in the tree after 4 minutes of looking, you know how you have 5 minutes to find your ball, and then you got to declare it lost automatically by the rules. You don't then have to identify it within that 1 minute. You basically have found it, so there's no you're not on the clock anymore. You can take as much time as you need to identify it. Another thing about this rule is what would probably happen a lot, and this is kind of crazy, but if you're in a state-level event, it's something you should be aware of. If you and your playing partner see the ball up there, maybe you didn't identify it yet, and you're like, you know what, we're not going to climb up there and get that ball, just drop one, take an unplayable, and let's go. Both players are penalized. Two players cannot knowingly agree to disregard a rule of golf. The other side of it, though, is that if either player didn't know better, if they didn't know that they had to identify the ball and they said they went through that, no penalty. Can you believe that?
What? Say it again.
If the player knowingly two players knowingly agree to violate a rule or disregard a regulation or rule of golf, that's a penalty,
right?
Yeah,
on both players.
Shot penalty.
If two players inadvertently,
they didn't know the rule.
It's really a disqualification, I think, in tournament play. Yeah. if the same two players do the same exact thing, but they didn't know better, they thought they were following the rule, or they didn't know they were breaking a rule, not penalized.
Wow.
They have to...
Not even a shot?
No, they have to go back and, well, it doesn't really say what they do, but it's true.
Wow.
This stuff's true. I researched some rules of golf today.
We got to get a rule book in the studio.
You guys don't trust me?
No, we trust
you.
No,
it sounds legit to me.
Yeah.
Sounds legit.
So it's strange that just intent, or not even intent, just knowledge, or no, that would be intent. They didn't intend to break the rule, or they normally know the rule exists and say, hey, let's not worry about it.
It's crazy to think they still wouldn't get a shot or something. Because like when people call in and say, so-and-so, you know, Tiger's ball went through the line here.
But the difference is that this is two players agreeing. Yeah, like if a PGA Tour player makes a mistake and a viewer sees it, this would apply to when you're playing partners and you say, you know, technically you're supposed to identify that ball first, but we both know it's yours, so just drop one.
Right. Yeah.
Disqualified! You know, technically, if it was like a New York State Mid-Am qualifier you know, any type of event like that. Obviously, Thursday night, Monday night league for you tonight, if that same scenario happened, you know, nobody's going to disqualify you.
Right,
but technically, by the rules, that's how it should go down.
Wow.
Also, to be noted in this discussion about trees, no relief from roots. The only free relief from natural objects is relief provided for loose impediments. A root is not loose. A root is not an obstruction. Therefore, the only relief provided by the rules is to take an unplayable lie. Mm-hmm. And hey, unplayable lie, that's a whole nother podcast, right, fellas?
Yeah. Yep. Yes, it is.
So let's move ahead and take a look at the FedEx playoffs. This week, after a week off, they're returning at the BMW Championships at Conway Farms Golf Club, 7,198-yard par 71 in Chicago. And I'm disappointed because the BMW used to always be at Cog Hill, and there's a course that I played, and I really enjoyed.
Dubs Dread.
Yep, I really enjoyed watching that tournament. But they rotate it now.
We talked about this a few weeks back. There's a lot of good courses, like in Chicago and New York, but why not keep it at the same places?
Right.
Yeah. Just Cog Hill's a great course that was redone recently. It's an unbelievable place.
I think it's better than Conway Farms. Nothing wrong with Conway Farms, but I've never heard of it before they started hosting this tournament. And Cog Hill is...
Jim Furyk's not shooting a 59 at Cog Hill, I'll tell you that much.
That's true. I certainly didn't.
You know what I mean?
I shot a 59 in like a four-hole span. I played pretty good that day, but I had a four-hole span where literally I went like 8, 9, 11, 10.
Well, Dubs Dread will eat you up. But that's the thing, though. It's like the not that these are rinky-dink courses by any stretch, obviously, but they move, you know, Liberty National, and in some of these courses they're moving around, you know, the not the Deutsche Bank, but the, what was the first one? I forget now. It seems like it was like 2 months ago.
The one after the Wyndham there.
The first FedEx one.
Yeah, how can we not think of it?
Come Barclays.
Barclays. Yeah, Barclays, good job.
Yeah. So they moved that one around. They're moving this one around.
Yeah.
You know, at least the TPC Boston, you know that one is what it is. And they keep that one there. So why not keep all four at the same spot?
Right. I mean, keep a tradition.
And it's weird that the one they keep is like the TPC Boston.
Yeah, it's a TPC Boston where, you know, that one they can go pretty low. I'd like to see them grind it out a little bit more like a U.S. Open or a PGA, you know. Well, not necessarily PGA. Sometimes those scores are
That's why I like in the rotation of the Barclays, I like that it'll be at Bethpage.
Yeah.
You know, if the rotation was like Winged Foot, Bethpage, and, you know, what's another great course in New Jersey? Pine Valley or something, you know.
Yeah.
But
even at Westchester Country Club where they had this tournament for a long
time
before.
Yeah, that could be another one in rotation, but a major championship caliber, Oak Hill, for example, which, is, by the way, is hosting the PGA Championship in 2023, so got that to look forward to in 8 years.
Sure. Get some media credentials for that.
But, I think that tournament would be great at a place like Oak Hill, and the other thing that's odd is the Tour Championship at East Lake. That's, you know, it's just, East Lake was a fine tournament when it was just a regular tour stop. Yeah, you know, it was always the Tour Championship, wasn't it? But no, it was the Firestone, or no, that's Ohio.
No, there was one before the Masters, wasn't it? The week before they used to have the Southern Bell or something, the Bell South.
Yeah,
Bell South.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, but it's but, the tour championship, I mean, the final.
You could have it at Atlanta Athletic Club if you're going to have it down there. I mean, there's just.
You can have it at Pinehurst. You can have it at Pebble Beach.
As big as this thing is, or they're trying to say it is, it's, I don't know if it's as big as we all think. Like we said before, too, these guys sitting out two events and still in contention.
Right.
I mean, put it on some tough courses. Make these guys, you know, make them play all four. If they have it, to have a chance at the $10 million, you got to play all four.
And I
have them on these great traditional courses.
I think they should be playing at 9,000 yards.
Well, hey, why not?
You
why
laugh. Hey,
construct a special course just for the Tour Championship.
Let's see these guys struggle a little bit.
Well, I mean, you could, I don't know if you need 9,000 yards, but definitely on some of these bigger,
let me see
bigger courses,
I
wanna
see
you could.
It. Let me see them play that.
Play Oakmont, you know, something like that.
9,000 yards.
I like Pebble, though, West Coast, prime time.
Yeah, that would be a nice bonus for the tour to have it West Coast every year for that purpose.
Absolutely.
But,
I don't know, why aren't we running the PGA Tour? What the, I mean.
Is there a 9,000 yard course out there?
I guarantee
there's
you
there's
got to
be one.
You can make one.
If there's, there's.
Guarantee you can make one.
It's got to be out in, like, some jungles in
someone
Brazil or something like that.
You take any of these big.
Maybe the Olympic
course.
You
can make it.
Is the Olympic, maybe the Olympic course should be 9,000.
It's got to be played by women and men.
See, Zach Johnson played 9,000 yards.
Let's see, Bob LaPrade play 9,000 yards.
Bob LaPrade's not going to play 9,000 yards. Bob LaPrade refuses to play 9,000
yards. Bob LaPrade's not going to win $10 million either.
I have a hard time with 6,400 yards.
So, anyways, you know, Ricky Fowler wins big at the Deutsche Bank. So now he's joins the FedEx Cup leader Jason Day and number two Jordan Spieth at the forefront of the 70-man field heading to the playoffs. Second half. Where the goal, essentially, after this week is to get top five, because if you're top five in the Tour Championship and you win, then you're the Tour Champion, which is another thing we could get into about, look, how can you win the Super Bowl, but you're not Super Bowl champion.
Right. I mean, Rory wins the next two. He wins the FedEx Cup. He sat out the first one and didn't do so. I mean, he was what, top 15 in the second one. So, but all he's got to do is win the next two, and he wins $10 million.
It would be nice if they were heading in today to this tournament where the top 16 or 32 advanced, and then you all go into seedings for match play.
Right.
So on 18, that could be something like, if Hunter Mahan makes this 10-footer, he'll be paired against Sergio Garcia. If not, he'll drop to whatever seed and play against whoever.
Right.
Mark Leishman.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. You got Usti's. He's 30th, so he's on the bubble, but he's playing well. So he can move up quite a bit if he wins. He'll get up to 6th, I think.
And Mahan. He's 52nd, but he's still everybody in the field has a chance to get the top 30 still.
Right, right. And he's you know, the way he's playing, this could be is he the only one that's been in every Tour Championship since it's the FedEx Cup?
Mahan?
Yeah.
I know that he has never missed a FedEx Cup event. If he's the only one, I think it's a very short list. He might have become one of the only ones so far now this deep into the season. I think when the playoffs started, I think it was a list of four or five maybe.
Right.
But he might be the only one.
A couple missed cuts by some guys.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, so he's got some.
Probably is the only one because they've been making this little that's an item we noticed. So if there was two, they would have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's the only one left.
And I mentioned Sergio Garcia. He also sat out the first two playoff events. He's back, hoping for a strong final 2 weeks. He's at 54th.
Right.
And just to give you an idea of kind of how much it cost these guys, he ended the regular season at 31st. He didn't play for 2 weeks. Now he's 54th. What's the incentive to play? I guess it would be a little bit easier for him to break the top 30, I suppose, if he was at 31st, or maybe would have already done it. But
yeah, I mean, he's I think one or two of these guys are going to be gone. The bigger names, you know, we were talking about Koepka earlier. He might, you know, Snedeker could definitely, you know, if he doesn't do well, he could fall out. Mahan, Garcia, any of those guys missed the cut. They're going to be out. Phil's in danger. Would this be the second year in a row Phil would miss the Tour Championship? I think it would be if he doesn't get in the top 30. He didn't play last year.
Yeah, and you know what? he was picked for the President's Cup, which, by the way, all 12 members of the President's Cup are playing this week. So that's another pretty cool thing if you're excited about the President's Cup. Get to see all these guys in action. But do you guys like Mickelson's is a pick for that?
No.
I mean, I didn't like it at all.
No, not at all.
You know, maybe you're looking for some veteran leadership, but that's a little too veteran, I think, at this point. I think if that's where you're going, then you look at Jim Furyk, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who's actually playing very well.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And there's probably a handful of others. I mean, geez, guy like J.J. Henry might be playing better than Mickelson right now. I don't know if he's...
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's... You know, you could go down the list of quite a few. I mean, yeah, he's got experience, but, you know, that's a reach.
So, got some rookies still alive in the FedEx this week. Justin Thompson, Tony Finau, Daniel Berger, and Zach Blair all alive in the playoffs. And speaking of Jim Furyk, he shot a 59 at Conway Farms in the second round 2013. So he obviously likes the course for you, those of you guys putting together your DraftKings team.
Was that the year he won the FedEx Cup or no?
Had to be, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, 2013? Or was it? I thought it was even a little longer ago than that.
Yeah, I think it was 12 or 11 or something like that.
Well, this was 2013 that he got the 59. So the only two guys in the field that really are guaranteed, top five positions heading to East Lake are...
One and two.
Day and Spieth, yep. Fowler, Henrik Stenson, Bubba Watson are also well ahead of number six, Charlie Hoffman, but there's a chance that two of those guys could get bumped if they don't play well this week, and one of the guys at their heels plays well. And not only does the Tour Championship await the top 30 in FedEx points after Sunday, but automatic entry to all four majors in 2016 for the top 30 this week. So that's pretty big, too, for some of these guys who aren't exempt for these tournaments.
Right.
I don't have a list of those guys, but I'm sure as we're watching the telecast this weekend, they'll make note of those players. And speaking of the telecast, it's going to be on Golf Channel on Thursday, Friday, 3 to 7 p.m. And then on the weekend, it... noon to 3:30 on NBC, 3:30 to 6 on the Golf Channel, which is odd, isn't that odd?
Yeah.
Must have a college football, Notre Dame game or something.
What day, Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday. It's noon to 3:30 on NBC, and then 3:30 to 6 on the Golf Channel.
Notre Dame's at home.
And then Sunday, you're going noon to 2 at the Golf Channel and 2 to 6 on NBC. So a little odd there to swap those that Saturday telecast around there.
Did you guys see? Not that we were watching it or every shot of it, but web.com, Norlander, Henry Norlander, the score he shot on Sunday. Mm-mm. Shot a 62 to win that tournament, get his tour card.
Wow.
So he's in there because they're in there. They have like a four tournament finals. They give the 25 that qualified a couple weeks ago from Q School. And then they have 25 more that they give out through this tour finals. But he shot a 62. It was the lowest final round on tour all season for web.com.
So, oh, wow.
I mean, I just thought that was worth noting. That's a pretty good score in a final round to win a tournament. He was down, I think he was down three to start the round, too. So congrats to him.
Nice.
And speaking of, this wouldn't be a good round. This would be bad rounds by our Walker Cup team.
Oh,
getting drubbed over there at Royal Lithium and St. Anne's. British / Ireland defeated the United States. This is the amateur competition, the Walker Cup, 16.5 to 9.5. U.S. only leads 6-5 in the series since 1995, despite having a 250 million population advantage.
Yeah.
And you remember Bryson DeChambeau? We talked about him a few weeks ago when he won the U.S. Amateur. Got a unique swing and concept and approach. And Bo Hostler were the only U.S. singles winners. Hostler won 3 points total, so only two Americans took points in this singles matches. It's out of control.
Did you see, again, with the foursomes, just like in the Ryder Cup, what is the deal? Why can we not?
Yeah.
We were 1-7 in foursomes in Europe in the Ryder Cup.
It is hard to explain, right?
Yeah, and then they get us 6-2 this year in the foursome. What is the deal?
I don't have an answer. I mean, it was speculated after the Ryder Cup that it was all about the fact that there wasn't as much camaraderie, which I always found kind of crazy because the Europeans are all from different countries, and Americas, right. We're all American, so we should have the camaraderie. That some of those countries have different languages, right. You know? Mm-hmm. But, for some reason there's this perception of the European camaraderie and the fight behind the European team for the Ryder Cup, and it's carried over for... this, which isn't, it's just British, Britain and Ireland. We all know how well they always get along. So, yeah. You know, it's, I don't have an answer for
weird,
it.
Though,
I kind of think it's enigma, but there must be something to it. You know, it can't just be a coincidence.
Well, then they also had, their team is set up weird too, because they require two people over 25, mid-amateurs, to be on the
U.S. On,
yeah.
Right.
Instead of taking your top six or seven qualified, or however they did it, they two of these people aren't even necessarily the best players out there.
And there is no set formula for points.
No.
This is all a secretive USGA process for choosing the team.
Right. But I mean,
no transparency.
You couldn't have found a couple better guys. I mean, yeah. It's not good. You know, those over 25 mid-ams were 1-5. And since they've been doing it that way, they're 3-8. So obviously, that's not working.
I tell you, the only thing is that nobody cares because nobody watches.
Yeah.
It wasn't even on TV. No, it was on ESPN3 and the BBC. If you lived over, it was on TV in Europe. But
I got
surprising
got my updates from Twitter.
It's just surprising that an event like that isn't more popular. But it's there's a lot of competition nowadays. You know, an amateur. Golf just isn't cutting it.
One of the writers said, you know, from the Ryder Cup came the task force after that one. And they said, maybe they should get a task force for the Walker Cup now, because the same issues are there.
Yeah, well, they'll be looking ahead to September 9th and 10th, 2017, where the Walker Cup comes back to America at Los Angeles Country Club. Probably most famous, I think that was where Corey Pavin hit that 5-wood or whatever it was at the final hole of the U.S. Open.
That was at Shinnecock. When he won his he won one of his first tournaments out there at LA Country Club, didn't he? He's from there.
Yeah, the LA Open, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that was at Riviera, though.
Great course.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. This is at Los Angeles Country Club.
Maybe we'll have to check that one out in a couple years.
Yeah. Take a flight out in 2017 to support the U.S. Walker Cup team.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Boy, we'd be sore. If they lost 16.5 to 9.5, if we made that trip, huh?
Those over 25 mid-ams are in there again, I'm going to be upset.
And what about old Lydia Ko? She won the Evian Masters. It's a major on the LPGA Tour, 18-year-old winner. She becomes the youngest major winner ever. Every golf just seems to get younger and younger. She is 6 months younger than Morgan Pressel was when she won the 2007 Crafts Nabisco Championship. Golf Channel's Randall Mell called her the ultimate golf's ultimate prodigy. So
mm-hmm. she won a tournament when she was 14 and her first LPGA when she was 15.
Not too shabby.
That's insane.
Not too shabby, Lydia Ko. Mm-hmm. And hey, speaking of women's golf, the Solheim Cup's coming up this week, and September 17th through 20th. The coverage is all on the Golf Channel. At St. Leon Rote Golf Club in Germany. And I don't know, fellas, what do you think about the U.S. team here? I mean, this is U.S. versus Europe, so there's no South Korean players that have been dominating the tour over the past few years. And I like our roster of ladies. You know, Stacey Lewis making a push to be one of the better players in the world, hopefully over the next couple of years. This will be her third appearance in the Solheim Cup. Lexi Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Christy Kerr. And good old Michelle Wee making, amazingly, her fourth now Solheim Cup. Brittany Lincecome.
You just hope they're coming into form.
Yeah.
Because you got, I think, four that have winning records on the roster, but some of them are playing well, even though they haven't, you know, have winning records.
Yeah, there's Morgan Pressel at 8-5-2.
Yeah, she was, And ironically, with that too, one of the captain's picks who's not playing well, Paula Creamer, has one of the best records in Solheim Cup history.
Right.
12-6-5. So you never know how that's going to play out.
Angela Stanford and Jarena Pillar both qualified on points, as did Allison Lee in her first appearance in the Solheim Cup. Lizette Salas qualified due to her Rolex ranking, and there you go with the two captain's picks, Brittany Lang and Paula Creamer. But, you know, if you're the LPGA or the American captain, you got to pick Paula Creamer. The LPGA is not going to let you not pick Paula Creamer, right?
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah, she's one of the biggest names on the tour.
Yeah, and so
regardless of how she's playing,
right, she's going to be on the team. She played in 2005, 2007, 2009, 2011, 2013, 12-6-5 in her career. And one more, I'm glad she's playing. I'd rather watch with Paula Creamer playing than without. Right?
No sure. doubt. Yeah. We got to get a win. We're 0-2 in the last two. Not really close. So yeah.
They got it this year.
Let's hope so.
How much do you guys think you're going to watch the Solheim Cup at all?
Watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. USA. Yeah. You got to watch, like, you know, watching the Olympic swimming.
So Friday, we're heading. We got a little event of our own. We're calling it the Verona Cup. We got 16 guys from Seneca Falls heading to Turning Stone for 36 holes.
Mm-hmm.
18 at Shenandoah and 18 at Adunio. Gracious host, Eric Lorenzetti. The PGA Pro over there, friend of the program, been on the show a few times. I'm really excited. I hope the weather forecast holds out. Right now they're calling for low 80s and sun. And
it's going to be beautiful.
Two of the finest golf courses, manicured-wise, you could play in the world. And a good group of guys going over. So next week we're going to probably give you a proper course and facilities review.
Yeah, it smells like a course review coming up.
Yep, So we'll play it. We'll tell you all about it. But really looking forward to it. Going to be exciting. We should have plenty of great stories next week. But for now, let's kick it over to Bobby's Pick of the Week. All right, Bob, what do you got this week?
Well, this week we got the Golf Shot GPS app. And if you like GPS apps that you can get on your phone, this is the app for you. It has a very clean interface. Looks like a yardage book with white background and hole overheads. It's available on Android, iPhone, and Windows phones. Free real-time GPS distance to the green on 500,000 golf holes and 40,000 golf courses worldwide. So if you get this app and you can't find, if your course isn't on it, then you might want to check.
All of our local courses are on there in New York State. It's an amazing list.
If your course is not, it might not be open anymore.
Right. Exactly. That's
they
my
got
point.
Them all.
Look at that interface, Bob, before you go further, though. I mean, that is, to me, like holding a yardage book in your hand. That's what appealed to me the most about this particular app.
Right. It has detailed satellite imagery of each hole and the ability to zoom in on specific target areas. Ability to track distances to hazards and layups in real time for each golf shot. Track your steps and your calories if you're trying to lose a little bit of the tire around your waist. And pace of play with the health monitoring features integrated with Apple Health app. So for those people that are health conscious, this is you can kill two birds with one stone here. Ability to track fairways, hit greens in regulation, and putt per hole, and other vital golf stats. Easy to use scorecard that allows you to keep your score for yourself and your entire foursome.
Yeah, there's a lot to this thing, but the thing I like the most of it is just for the yardage factor, the look of it. I love it. The hole overheads are pretty sharp. And you can even do a 3D flyby. That doesn't look as great, but it does give you a good look at the hole from tee to green.
What's the difference between the first one and then the $29.99 one? How much difference do we know what they do extra on that one?
I did look at that. The difference between Golf Shot Plus and Golf Shot Plus here is one-time payment gets you access to lifetime features such as real-time distances to all key hazards and targets.
3D flyover previews, ability to zoom in, scorecard features, the Apple Watch and Android support.
Oh, okay.
And honestly, you have it all unlocked for like 2 weeks because I downloaded the app and you know, I have access to all that stuff.
Okay.
But you know, it depends on where you want to track your information about your game, your stats, or how deep you want to go into it.
Right.
But what I like is just yardages, and I wouldn't use it on my home course. I would use it when I go to play another course. Mm-hmm. It's just a really clean yardage book,
right,
on your phone. So right.
Nice. So yeah, Bobby, that's your pick of the week. It's a good one as usual. Want to remind everybody to subscribe to our YouTube channel or like this video. We're going away in just a couple weeks here. We're talking about two more episodes after this before we're taking a little hiatus for the season. And so you're going to want to get hooked up so we're back in your feed when we return in the spring, early spring. We're on iTunes, Stitcher.com, or you can enjoy the podcast via the FingerLakes1.com app, also available for free at the Android or Apple Store. All these links, our latest episodes, and complete archives are online at fingerlakes1.tv/golfpod. Which brings us to the local golf calendar, and it's official. Oak Hill will host the 2023 PGA Championship. The PGA of America announced last Wednesday that Oak Hill Country Club in Pittsburgh will host the 105th PGA Championship on the famed East Course. This will be a record-tying fourth PGA Championship at Oak Hill, designed by Don Ross in 1925. The only other course to host the PGA Championship four times, Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so that's a great notch in the feather of a great championship course right here in our neck of the woods. That's a good point. I didn't know that.
Central New York PGA update. Last week it was the Folds of Honor Pro-Am on Tuesday because of Labor Day. It was Tuesday, September 8th at Tuscarora. Sean Daddy won with a 69. Earlier today, the Turning Stone Pro-Am Series Championship at Shenandoah was held. Eric Manning, Joel Dieter, and Joe Norman topped the leaderboard, each shooting even par. So, hey, fellas, we're going to Shenandoah. We can go ahead and shoot even par.
Sure.
On Friday, right?
Could happen.
We're playing Shenandoah in the morning, Aduño in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Dang. And then next week, the Players / Head Pro Championship will be held. This is an interesting format, too. They're playing 18 holes at Timberbanks and 18 holes at Radisson. So a little Baldwinsville area.
Yeah.
Good tracks.
Yeah. Big weekend for two-man scrambles. We mentioned it before. Coming up at the end of this month, Saturday, September 26th, is the SFCC Scratch Series two-man fall scramble. More information and details on signing up at SenecaFallsCountryClub.com. And then the next day, Sunday, the 27th of September, is the 2015 Geneva Country Club Fall Invitational two-man scramble. And more information on that is at GCGenevaNY.com. Two great two-man scrambles, and I'm urging you to make a weekend of it. Grab a partner, sign up for both, and try your luck in these two cash events. We won't report you to the New York State or whoever, you know, if blow your amateur status here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep it all on the down low, I'm sure, at these two events. But great fall tournaments, a lot of great golf left here in the fall. And a lot of people still knocking in holes in one, like Bob Church of Penn Yan, who aced the 165-yard 12th hole at Silver Creek with a 7-iron during the Finger Lakes Seniors Championship at Silver Creek this week, which, by the way, got to mention right now, was won by Jim Johnson out of Canandaigua. Second place was Mike Birdsall and our very own Doug Brown, the captain.
Oh, nice.
Here at the Finger Lakes Golf Podcast, finished 6th, I believe.
Nice.
Which are great finishes by...
Good job.
That was a... That's a good term at the Finger Lakes Seniors. It bounces around courses. But Bob Church, ace the 12th. That's the downhill one on the back nine with a 7-iron. Dan Pope used a 6-iron to score a hole-in-one on the 140-yard 13th hole at Blue Heron Hills. Mike Lesh aced the 178-yard 9th hole at Highland Park in Auburn using a 6-iron. And Buddy Sayer also aced the ninth hole at Highland using a 6-iron. Molly Gottfried aced the 95-yard sixth hole at Millstone Golf Course using a lob wedge. And Lynn Carlisle used a 5-hybrid to ace the 142-yard 16th hole at Sodus Bay. And Roger Lewis got a hole-in-one on the 173-yard 11th hole at Bristol Harbor using a 6-iron. Send us your hole-in-ones. Contact at fingerlakes1.com. Subject line, FLX Golfer. Plenty of aces to be made in the 2015 season. And also, congratulations to Bill Baker. At age 80, he shot his age at Highland Park in Auburn last week, or maybe it was about 2 weeks ago now. So, congratulations, Bill Baker.
Good for Bill.
And that brings us to the Zen Tip of the Week.
Zen Tip of the Week.
Okay, this week's Zen Tip of the Week, touched on this in past episodes, but anybody that watched last week when we talked about the club championship, I told a quick story about during my round, I was in a position on the sixth hole where my opponent was on the, Stevie Brown was on the green and two on a par five putting for eagle, and I was 20 yards short of the green in the right rough, hitting my fourth shot on the par five, so even if he two-putted, I needed to hold that shot just to have a chance, match play. And there was something about that shot where when I was looking it over, I liked the lie. I got up to the green and said, you know, if I land it in this little circle here and hit this kind of exact spot right there, that it should bounce here and trickle out and go right into the hole. And I didn't make the shot, but I really tried to. I tried to make it, even though it was a 20-yard shot from off the green. I visualized it. I felt I could hit it, and I hit very close, if not exactly, to the spot I chose, and really, as it released, thought I had a good chance. And it didn't go in, but I had a, it was 3 inches from the hole. Mm-hmm. So the tip is, you know, on these shots, anywhere 50 yards inside of the green, sometimes you're just thinking so much, you know, leave it below the hole, don't push it right into the bunker, or you know, maybe you don't, whatever it is, think about making the shot. Try to hole it from anywhere. You're in the bunker. Well, geez, if I flop it out of there and it lands right there, it should trickle down and go in. Focus on that, trying to make the shot in the hole, and you'll be very happy with the shots that you aren't successful in holing, which will be 95% of them. But you'll be
tapping it in.
Yeah, better than, and you know, Bob, I know this might go against something you do short game where you're like, I like to get it within a hula hoop. Mm-hmm. You pick a hula hoop. And, you know, maybe that I might think that way depending on what kind of lie I got or whatever. But I, looking back over the past few years of playing golf, my best shots come when I'm, like, not thinking get it close, but I'm thinking make it, mm-hmm. you know? So that's the tip. Try to make it.
I like it.
Try to make it with your wedge. Try to make it with your putter on the, from putting off the green. Try to make it from the bunker. Try to knock it in the hole.
Like on 16 yesterday.
Yeah, 16 yesterday.
A couple long ones.
Rhett and I were partners. Our back was against the wall, and Rhett started it must have been 50 feet.
Yeah,
and probably 7 feet of fringe, or maybe not quite, maybe 5 feet of fringe.
Yeah, it
was, both of them were long. Yeah,
we had about three breaks in there, and it went like back and forth. Bob was watching it.
Yeah,
yep. He nails it
right in the hole.
In the hole,
only good shot I had all day
for par.
Yep,
and then I also had a lengthy par putt, probably 40 feet, yeah. 45 yeah, feet,
edge yep. of the green, right down at the bottom.
Yep, and I knocked it in the hole. It was going really fast and hit dead center, and just, it was very, those shots were very exciting back to back, but almost 100 feet of total putt we made on that one hole.
At least.
So,
I scared you guys a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Got us riled up.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were behind. You were there in the group. You were there. Yeah. You know, well, he stepped up and knocked in like a 7-footer for par to tie the hole that you needed.
Yeah.
Your partner made bogey.
Right.
How's your game coming along, Bob, honestly, like lately? We got a few minutes here.
It sucks. Bottom line.
You feel that way?
Yeah. I'm waiting for it to snow.
No, Bob, don't say
if
stuff
it snows
like that.
Tomorrow, I'm checking out. I'm done.
Well, it won't snow tomorrow. Don't what's your goal? Like what's your goal for this weekend at Turning Stone or any of our Rhett? What's your goal,
Bob? Jeez, I was.
We're having a modified nitro scoring, which we've talked about on this podcast too, where it's kind of handicapped by point, and then it's like a Stableford system of points. So it's semi-equal, so you have that on the line, you have the Verona Cup on the line, an individual event based on the nitro scoring system. Might have some interior matches going on with our groups during the two rounds.
Sure.
And then you're posting a score yourself, you know, just on the golf courses, you know. So I don't know if you guys have even thought about goals or if it's just like, let's have fun.
After yesterday's tough day on the tee boxes, I definitely thought about it, that if I can get off the tee, and I can make some putts that I shoot, you know, right around my handicap, 12, 10, then I can have a chance to be in the race for the Nitro Champion, for the Verona Cup.
For the Verona Cup, right.
But that's, you know, the tee box is the key.
Yeah.
Up there.
A little less pressure up there at those courses, the little wider fairways. There is trouble that you won't see at Seneca Falls, like, you know, grassy waste areas and some water and some creeks that run through Aduño a little bit in Shenandoah.
Yeah.
But for the most part, wide fairways.
Yep. Absolutely.
What about you, Bob?
Yeah, what are your goals?
My goal is to win. I'll find a way, regardless of how bad I'm hitting it, you know. Don't keep doing the same thing over and over. Find another way to make it happen.
Now, you know, my goal playing wise, I've been playing pretty good as of late, and I kind of want to take it to another course and see, you know. So I'm kind of, I think my goal is going to be I want to shoot in the 70s on either one of those courses. I played them both a number of times now, and I think if I can hit a lot of greens and putt halfway well, I think that I could do that. And I think if I did do that, that I would win the Verona Cup. Two rounds in the 70s, I think, wins the Verona Cup, right? No matter who you are in this group.
Nitro scoring, absolutely.
I have a huge advantage over the rest of the field, though, here, because I'm the only Aim Point Express guy coming to this on greens that are not so familiar.
No, that's true, too. That's a good point.
Yeah, so I guarantee you I'm going to output every one of you.
Yeah, that's a bold statement. I actually had a little heart-to-heart with Bobby last Wednesday night. We golf on Wednesdays, and we have dinner after, and then we go home, and Bob and I were among the last two in the old parking lot. And I said, Bob, I really think it's time that you stop getting away from the technical aspects of this game and start to just trust your feeling and be willing to play different types of shots. And I think even since the beginning of the year now, you've developed a low shot that you've used a few times where you could never hit it low out of trouble. Now,
no, the last quarter of this year, I've been hitting low shots consistently when I needed to.
Right.
And, you know, tonight I had to use it three or four times, and it was great.
It's the most overlooked shot to have in your game is like the low punch out.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of guys can't not do it. They just can't.
Yeah. I have a lot of practice with that.
And it's a very important shot. So the other thing, it wasn't just that shot. Oh, you were willing to try a shot in the club championship qualifier that you really weren't sure if you could pull off, but at that moment it felt good and you felt you could do it. It was a low, like 220-yard cutting three-wooder, and you hit it perfect based on feel. You set up to it.
Yep.
That's what I want to see, is more feel. Because what you'll find, Bob, is that the technical stuff is good and you can get it together for a while. But under stressful situations, that technical approach never stands up.
Right. Doesn't work.
And I think it's easier, and I could be wrong here, I think it's easier to trust your feel in those situations than it is to trust the technical aspects of your setup, maybe. But.
Right.
I don't know. So that's if I could give you any advice, I think it's time for you to stop being the technician and start becoming the field player. Trust your hands, trust your feelings, trust your feelings.
Right.
Especially on courses you haven't played in a while.
Yeah, for sure. Just
go out there and freewheel it, buddy.
Well, I think, you know, the old saying paralysis through analysis, you know, that tends to bite a lot of guys in the butt. So, I don't know. I'm open to anything at this point.
And then Rhett, this weekend, I two times ago we played, every drive was great, and you struggled with your putter, and then this past weekend every drive was just like you were really bad with the driver. But it was also cold and rainy, which was a lot different conditions than we've seen in a while.
Very different.
So
no excuses. We'll get it right for Friday.
I can't wait for Friday. It's going to be a great day of golf. It's going to be great for me to win the Verona Cup.
You got a nice trophy, I heard, too.
Yeah, thanks to Dennis and old Jimmy Millis getting us. They purchased the trophy, and the winner will keep it each year. And this has been an annual event, but this is the first year we're calling it something, and it's going to be good time. So we'll get up early in the morning on Friday and hope for good weather. And remember, folks, we have just 2 weeks remaining, two more shows in this week's season of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast. So do remember, subscribe on Stitcher.com, iTunes, on YouTube, and we're online at fingerlakes1.tv/golfpod. So, fellas, thanks for hanging out again tonight. Rhett.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Bob.
Absolutely.
Cat. Bobcat. That name's sticking.
Bobcat.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, everybody's calling you Bobcat now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to make a poster and put it in the locker room that has your face like half superimposed, transparent, and then there's like a silhouette of a bobcat and you swinging a golf club and staring down the shot.
Yeah.
Like a bobcat warning or something, you know what I mean?
Bobcats are on the rise in upstate New York.
They are, I saw too. That. Yeah, I saw that article. Yeah.
Bobcats are on the rise in upstate New York.
Yeah. Good for them.
Well, thanks everybody for hanging out with us for episode 40. So that we're getting up there as far as episodes go on the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast. And hope you had a great time hanging out with us. And again, we'll be back next Monday evening at 9 o'clock. Until then, hit 'em long, not often.
Local content like this by becoming a patron of FingerLakes1.com. Visit patreon.com/FL1.